Mahamaprabhu said to me over breakfast, bringing again this memento mori habit, which was a general practice in Europe that really didn't die out until the 18th century, really. French Enlightenment, you know, but people used to systematically remember their death, memento mori. They had these artifacts that were called memento moris, often a skull. You know, there's this famous scene in Hamlet when he comes back to Denmark and they're grave diggers, they're clowns, they're digging up, and he asks, whose grave is this? So this is the grave of York. He was a court jester. And Hamlet remembered from his childhood, he used to play with the court jester all the time, and he picks up the skull and holds it up like this. And then he says, alas, poor Yorick. I knew him well, Horatio. Here hung those lips. You know, like the skull. And like everybody in Elizabethan England would have reminded them of a way they were enjoined to be, to remember death. After Shakespeare, there was the great English poet John Donne, called a metaphysical poet. He was also a clergyman, and he got elevated to a high position as the dean of St. Paul's Cathedral, very high position. And as part of the position, his official portrait was painted and hung in a prominent place in his house, you know, in all his ecclesiastical finery. And so what he did was, and at that time, dead people were buried in what they called a winding sheet, a long, narrow cloth that was wrapped around the body. So he took his winding sheet, had his winding sheet made early, and draped it over his official portrait. So whenever he looked at a picture of himself in all his finery and position, he'd remember. He wouldn't forget. So this was a common mentality. After progress and the so-called enlightenment, when people no longer could deal with death, you less and less able to deal with it, because everything you were working for always depended upon the death didn't happen. If you want to enjoy in this world, my first advice is, you know, first don't grow old. Stop at 18 if you can. But then don't die. So people lead their lives, and at the end there's this weird, absurd, unintegrated anomaly that happens. And when it does happen, people don't know what to do about it. So, and it's hard to remember. Even in the Middle Ages, people were always reminding themselves because, you know, our own animal vitality, it's just built into being an animal body that you want to keep on going. I remember when I was in the hospital, I come back from India with what turned out to be a blood poisoning, septicemia, and I was getting sicker and sicker, and finally it took me, went to an emergency room, and there was some accident there, and there was teenagers with blood on their shirts, and I was sort of sitting in the background, and finally somebody come and took my blood pressure, and there was no blood pressure. Little things start to happen. So they pumped me full of liquids and antibiotics, and then the doctor comes and says to me, he says, you don't know how close you came to, and he just went like this. He said, you know, what you have, Jim Henson, who made the Muppets, he died of this. He says, you were really close. And the first thing I felt was like right out of my cells was this animal exuberance. I'm it's just like then I started to reflect about the whole situation. So it's hard. It's hard for us, and so especially in appreciation of the gruesome story we heard from my colleague here. Krishna actually lists as one of the items of knowledge. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, dukkha, dosha, anadarshanam. Knowledge of the evils of birth, death, old age, and disease. He has to list it. Because it's obvious, right? It's a truism, you know. Hamlet says, his mother, he's mourning his father. Oh, it's common, he says. His mother says, all who live must die, passing through nature to eternity. You know, why seems it so particular with you, she says. You know, yeah, it's common. We all know it. So, but it has to be, it's listed as an item of knowledge because actually people don't know. And that condition is called in psychology in denial. Now here's what Prabhupada says. One should try to understand the distress of accepting birth, death, old age, and disease. There are descriptions in various Vedic literatures of birth. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the world of the unborn, the child's stay in the womb of the mother, its sufferings, and so on, are all very graphically described. It should be thoroughly understood that birth is distressful. Because we forget how much distress we have suffered within the womb of the mother, we do not make any solution to the repetition of birth and death. Similarly, at the time of death, there are all kinds of sufferings. And they are also mentioned in the authoritative scriptures. These should be discussed. As far as disease and old age are concerned, everyone gets practical experience. No one wants to be diseased, no one wants to become old, but there is no avoiding these. Unless we have a pessimistic view of this material life, considering the distresses of birth, death, old age, and disease, there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life. This is Prabhupada's instruction on this matter. I gave a class on this once in the New York temple, and some devotee, a woman in the audience, she objected. This initiated devotee, she objected. There's an unhealthy outlook to a morbid consciousness, you know, and so on. Huh? This is a purport to, in chapter 13, there's a number of verses together with a single purport, 8 through 12, right. And and Prabhupada goes through each of these items and discusses them. So this is what he said. It should be discussed because we have this instinct not to remember. There's a French philosopher, Pascal, a philosopher and theologian, also a mathematician, who said that, he said, human beings are so necessarily mad, meaning insane, human beings are so necessarily mad that not to be mad is another form of madness. In other words, if we looked at the world as it really is around us all the time, we would go crazy. And so therefore we have delusions. Oh, and you know, every time I see a beautiful day, I think to myself, it's a nice day in Marchaloka. <You know? laughs> So I don't forget. The devotees in the early days are really heavy about this stuff. It was in the evening at the end of a Sunday feast lecture, and I stepped out of the door of the temple, and it was a sunset actually.
You were a pastor.
I wasn't even living in the temple. I was a congregational member. I stepped outside and I, and there was a temple devotee, a woman named Jamtavati, standing next to me. And I said, oh, what a beautiful sunset. She said, it is not beautiful. It's terrible. And if you think it's beautiful, you'll just have to take birth again to enjoy it. And, you know, I was a little, it took me a little while to get over that and think, well, you know, she's right. You know, I mean, there's more tactful ways, you know. Yes, it is, and think of how much more beautiful Krishna is. And, you know, anyway, But the instinct is correct because we will very easily, because the material world is what it is. One of the things that was a big impetus for my becoming a devotee, I was in graduate school, I was in religious studies, and I had a brother who was 2 years younger than I was, and like a brother who's, we were very, very close, and he was killed in a motorcycle accident. He must have been about 22 years old. Naturally, I mean, it was devastating, just devastating. I mean, what happened to my parents is unimaginable, but I became filled with this grief, and I started to think, and when that happens, you think, oh, this is what the world is really like. Smasana vairagya, I think, huh? The renunciation at the crematorium, meaning it's temporary. Well, I didn't know about this yet. This is before I was a devotee or anything, but I thought, I want to remember this. I don't want to forget this. Then I thought, you know, I'm feeling this way because one person has died, and I have this accidental relationship that this is my brother, but all around me, people are dying every day. In this city, people are all, it's always happening. And I don't feel a thing. And so there must be every day in this city, you know, thousands of people in a state of grief because people have died. And it's all going on, and we think it's a nice place. And if I had actually any really feeling for people or any real knowledge, you know, I would never stop mourning. Because why just this person? I should feel the same way about everybody. So I started to think like this, you know, that what is this world really like? Then I remembered that Pascal quotation, you know, that if you really think of what the world is like and it's before us, you would go crazy. So people, we have erected these defense mechanisms. Also, another thing that happens is to soldiers who have spent a long time in combat. They call this sometimes post-traumatic stress disorder now. And I read an account by one soldier that he said that when soldiers in combat, when they undergo combat, they think that this is the way the world really is. Now all the veils have been removed, and now I'm seeing nature as it really is. And he says, after that, they never trust the peace. They think at any time, you know, the curtain can open and you see things that there really are. And when Sundar Rup described to me, when all these devotees were in the airport in Rome to travel to Israel, there was a terrorist attack on Israeli Airlines. And one minute they're all in this very peaceful, airport, and people are eating and lining up and saying goodbye and greeting people, and it's just like a peaceful, normal scene. And apparently these guys came toward the place where people were waiting to get in the flight to Israel, and they had hand grenades, and they just bowled them along under the ground, underneath people's feet, just bouncing along like bowling balls, you know. And so all of a sudden, everything, one minute, then the next minute, you know, body parts flying everywhere, and then they opened up with machine guns, and then the Italian people opened up with their machine guns. It was like just instant carnage in just a minute. It just changed so fast. This is the way the material world is. It is a disaster movie happening right now. It's a little bit slow motion. We don't notice, and we don't want to notice. We don't see it, but that's what it is. It is actually Marchaloka. And we go into denial. There's a really good book by Ernest Becker called The Denial of Death. It won a Pulitzer Prize when it came out in the middle 70s. And he talks about, it's actually a kind of based on the writings of Otto Rank, one of the early psychoanalytic students of Freud, who separated from him, thought Freud was superficial and that more deep things were going on in human life. And to him, like one of the central features of human society is denial of death, and most human projects are projects to reinforce that denial. Are different kinds of immortality projects or God projects that people have going. It's a brilliant book, and actually I wrote a BTG article called Immortal Longings, which is kind of took a lot of his stuff. In those days you couldn't talk about any other writings outside of Krishna consciousness, but so many things that I had learned from Prabhupada were just illustrating this and making it deeper. Another very interesting thing, one of the few works of fiction I could really recommend to every devotee, is a story by Tolstoy called The Death of Ivan Illich, or Ivan Illich. It's just a short story. And it tells the story of a prosperous Russian bureaucrat who has his family and his wife and society and everything like that. And he has a little accident, and it gradually he comes to realize that he had a kind of a wound from a household accident, and it wasn't healing, and that actually he was dying. The doctors wouldn't tell him that. Nobody would say anything. Everybody just pretended it wasn't happening. Nobody wanted to deal with it. His children, they were going out their social affairs and everything, and here he's completely isolated, and he says, this momentous thing is happening, this most important thing in my life, and I'm completely without any communication, because everybody was going to lead their normal lives by ignoring what was happening. And I noticed, like, when I've been to funerals of non-devotees, the main thing is to get it over with and to forget. And first thing that happens after the funeral, they go home and the alcohol comes out. And, you know, let's get back to enjoying as soon as possible. Let's forget this thing. That's why, when we were discussing these incidents of devotees leaving their bodies, if any non-devotees happen to see some of this or see some of this is happening, they are just amazed, because we know how to deal with it. It's not an anomaly. It's something that's integrated into our lives. As much as somebody who's taking a course of study in a university, the final exam is integrated into their study. In a sense that you know, your whole thing is for the final exam, preparation for the final exam. And the German philosopher Martin Heidegger said, "Man is a being towards death." Yeah. So this is our condition. So we are actually normal. Because if we have a thorough understanding of Krishna consciousness, if we have not staked our happiness on the future of the material body, then we can actually look at the world the way it is. If our happiness depends upon the future well-being of our material existence, then we can't bear it. So these two things go side by side, you know, jnana, vairagya. You always know there's a compound, jnana, vairagya, always together. So one is detachment, and the other is knowledge. First there's knowledge, then some detachment, and the detachment increases the knowledge, and they work together. And so we are at all times I want to describe Krishna consciousness in a certain way. What happens when we become a devotee? Well, we do this thing. We surrender to Krishna. We look at all our different material attachments and everything, and we understand. Actually, I don't own anything. I don't own my house. I don't own my car. This is imaginary imposition. This is my wife. This is my child, and I give up these ownerships of so many things, and then I bow down before Krishna. I go in front of Radha Neela Madhava, and I lay down flat, and I say, "I am yours. Everything belongs to you. I've given up my false ownership." That's getting the process of death over with in the nice way. We give up everything, and we surrender to Krishna. Sometimes at a Sunday feast, I'm standing up and I'm saying the Prema Dwani prayers, and all the devotees in front are down offering dandabats in the floor. And I see some guests, they're looking at this, you know, they're not used to this kind of acting out. And they have, and I can read their minds, "You'll never catch me doing something like that. I'm not going to bow down." But we say to people, we ask them to surrender to Krishna. But the truth is, they have no alternative. Because Prabhupada points out that at the time of death, everyone surrenders to Krishna. They say, I won't give up my car. I'm not going to bow down to anybody. But what happens at the time of death? First of all, everything is taken away. Your money, your bank balance, your pride. I mean, you really have to get humble, right? At the time of death, because Krishna and you meet Krishna in the form of death, as Prabhupada puts it. Bhagavad Gita says that I am all devouring death. This is because this is how people meet Krishna. How do they meet Krishna? In that form. Because they don't want to surrender to it, so now they do it in this way. At the time of death, everything is taken away from them that they thought that they owned. And then they fall flat. You know, it's dandabats to Krishna. However, they're a little sloppy, but they bow down by force. So really, there's no choice. And so, in a sense, by becoming devotees, we die. We are in the process of divesting ourselves of all these false possessions, and when we surrender to Krishna, we meet him in the really nice way. It's the nice process, but there's no choice, because we are constitutionally the servant of Krishna, and if we don't accept that position, then by force, through the agency of material nature, we bow down before Krishna. So in that sense, everything that we do in devotional service is, in fact, not only is it is death. If we're successful, we get it over with. We depend only on Krishna, and we give up attachments to everything else. That's why when devotees approach the time of death, there's plenty of experience that people's Krishna consciousness really accelerates. Because when it comes to giving up everything, they accept that. A materialist, they want to hang on to this, they want to hang on to that, they're fighting the process, it becomes anguish. But a devotee, okay, maybe I still have some attachments. Now it's clear that there's nothing left for me to depend on but Krishna. That's always been the case. It's always been the case. But our different illusions that we had some other shelter, you know, hasn't quite. So it's mercy. We experience it as mercy. And so people's advancement accelerates greatly because they, in fact, recognize what's happening and they depend exclusively on Krishna. So these two things, remembrance of Krishna becoming free from everything else, virakti anyatra, this is part of our this is part of our process. There's a really scholar named Rick Giroux. He was a devotee, not an ISKCON devotee. I don't know what his name was. Maybe he had some connection with ISKCON, but as a Gaudiya Vaishnava, and I don't know his devotee name. But his book is name and the title is Rick Giroux. He was professor somewhere, Vassar or something. Anyway, he wrote a book about Srimad Bhagavatam, and he calls it Tales for the Dying, which is really a beautiful title. And it certainly is, right? You're starting off with Maharaj Parikshit, and he's dying. And he says, that question, Anta Narayana Smriti, that's the answer to the question. What is a man's duty at the time of death? And Shukadev Goswami said the same as during his lifetime. it's actually no different. So you see that the Bhagavatam is full of interesting death stories. The story of the death of Chitraketu's son. He was assassinated by the envious co-wives, and the little Narada Muni brings the little baby back to life, who then lectures them all. You start going through Bhagavatam and see how many stories are about death, and it ends with the whole disappearance of the Yadu dynasty and Krishna's instructions to Uddhava. It's all in this context of letting go, giving up, getting away, moving on to the next thing. So this idea of thinking about death, keeping it always in mind is really what our practice is about. It's not just something we add on. We have to get past this illusion. Death is an illusion, Prabhupada said, which we have imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. I can't find that in database, but there was in the early days there was some list of things that Prabhupada said that was passed around. I guess maybe a tape recorder wasn't on at the time, but he did say it. It's really great. Huh? Death is an illusion we imposed upon ourselves. Why? Due to our desire to enjoy in the world. Because that creates the false ego. If you look in the Bhagavatam, the account of creation, the first thing that shows up in the Mahatattva is false ego. And then it's false ego and goodness, passion, and ignorance, and then everything evolves out of that. So it's like the core element, so to speak. The root element. Why? Because it's for the bewilderment of the living entities who are coming in there. So it's this false ego which is the knot of attachment. And so this desire to enjoy creates this illusion of death. Because of course I'm eternal. We all know this. And I'm not my body. I'm a spirit soul. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to have experience. Saying it is just a theory. The practice has to be I have some actual realized knowledge of this. And the realized knowledge comes from detachment and attachment to Krishna. And then we can actually begin to experience ourselves. But if we have not invested our happiness on the future course of material nature, and we have a bright future, but it doesn't depend upon anything in the material world. It depends upon our relationship with Krishna. Then where's death for us? Prabhupada described it as a change of location. If we spend our energy serving Krishna, say if I'm in a temple, and what do? I hear kirtan, I hear Bhagavatam class, I cook for Krishna, I make garlands for Krishna. What happens at the time of death? One of the best definitions of death I read ever, before I became a devotee, I played around with astrology some, and I had this cheap paperback astrology book. And in that book, it said, death is the ultimate failure to perpetuate relationships. And when I became a devotee, I really remember that, because if our relationship is with Krishna and with the devotees, then there's no failure to perpetuate relationships. Whatever we're doing here in the temple with the devotees, we will continue. The relationship with Krishna and the relationship with the devotees goes on. Prabhupada said famously, there'll be another ISKCON in the spiritual sky. No GBC, though. The Cisco Swamis will be the GBC, right? So if we just do what we're supposed to do, or we really do what we're doing, we've completed it. Our relationships are eternal. We are eternal associates. Mr. Nair must stay. Prabhupada said, we said that we are eternal associates. And so what we have done then is really become the dying business is over already. Because what is essentially a death is about is has already been accomplished, and we just keep on going. We have already entered our eternal life. But it's good to remember, as long as Prabhupada said, you should never, as long as you're in the material world, you should never feel yourself safe. So that's why it's always good to remember that illusion can keep. And especially if circumstantially we have to associate with non-devotees, it's very easy to get infected with, the enjoying spirit is there right away. Let's go do this, let's do that. And the people are building up stupid projects in the material world. And, you know, we're social and other people are enthusiastic about, we sort of get enthusiastic also. And so we have to be careful in those ways to avoid reinfection with the false ego. It's that deadly germ. It's the plague that's going around the material world. Huh? The plague of death. Okay, maybe I'll stop there.